death is not the worst thing. The worst thing is not living, while you're here. Like, death is not living how you want to live. Yes, not following your heart. That's the worst. That it's a living death. Death is not the worst thing. The worst thing is not living, while you're here. Like, death is not living how you want to live. Yes, not following your heart. That's the worst. That it's a living death. Death is not the worst thing. The worst thing is not living, while you're here. Like, death is not living how you want to live. Yes, not following your heart. That's the worst. That it's a living death.
It was so cool just to see s folks in the metal community, just universally support the album and others. I'm sure your family loves that record. Like, I could see my mom would because my mom loves, Simon and Garfunkel, Paul Simon. Like, she would appreciate it. So many other singers. Like, I've said enough. How do you feel? With this.
I definitely feel like there are members of my family who probably like this record more than anything I've done, besides Sib Rosa Subdued. Like, I'm the only member of my family who's into really heavy music. So yeah, sometimes they had trouble connecting with it, and that's definitely true. I think they like this one the best. But thank you so much for the amazing review you did. I mean, I posted it on Instagram and on Facebook, and yeah, that was a really amazing and thoughtful and incredibly positive review. So I really appreciate that. Yes, it's been really amazing to see the reception. And yes, putting out this record was hell. It was really, really difficult. From the whole process was so hard. And even after we finished recording the album and having an initial mix, I hit some setbacks that nearly derailed it ever getting released, ever. So it is crazy that it finally came out at all, honestly. It really is. And yeah, and then the second remix, I've never done anything like that. Have never done anything like that before. And it was just arduous. Just to give you a sense of the complexity and the amount of recording and effort that went into the recording, Billy has said We used to joke around with Billy, and we would say, we'd say, we feel sorry for the guy who has to mix this, because there's so many tracks and layers when we record it. And we would all laugh, and he wouldn't laugh. He would just be like, yeah, I feel sorry for him too. Like, he was like serious. He was like seriously bummed at the thought of it. And he said that the Keening is the only band besides Bellwitch that has set, had as many tracks as we've had on an individual, like on a song. Like, I think the max is 192 or something, and we have approached that, or so.
That's amazing. Yeah, I just wanted to share a few nerd notes with you about the record.
Yes.
Like, there's some things on here that just like were stunning to me. Like, one of the things like I deeply appreciate about the whole thing, it's got this fantastic alchemy of incredibly well-developed songs with melodies, but this overall ambience, like that is just so incomparable to me, like to bring those together. I mean, I have to reach outside of heavy music, like what people, I would consider Paul Simon's Seven Psalms to be heavy as fuck. Like, it was a dream he had, and then he wrote it. And like Paul Simon, like, and the way he approaches like incredible songwriting, but he's so into sound and ambience and like really bringing out the sound. So like, I was just stunned by that. So that's one thing, like so tasteful. Everything on this album has its place. Everything. I also loved, and this was a Paul Simon connection, that on several of the songs there were like these nonsense words. There was these la la las, but they were anthemic. But they weren't cheesy. Like they were like the boxer, I mean, he's the Paul Simon sort of, I think maybe in many ways, one of the masters of like using nonsense words, but it was so cool. And so it triggered so many connections for me, like in what I love about all different kinds of music. I don't know. Do you want to reflect on what I've said so far?
It's interesting because I've never done things like the themes that I'm singing, and I mean, I've never done anything like that before, and I did that a lot on this album, like oohs and ahs and backing choruses things, and I don't know where that all came from. It just kind of happened, like that's what needed to happen in those plot parts, and so that's what appeared there. But I do remember reflecting on that a couple times, like, so weird that there are all these like oohs and ahs, kind of like I'm an indie rock singer songwriter instead of I don't know, a metal adjacent project. I don't know.
But one of the things I would say just as a reflection on what you just said though is you made these choices, but I mean, you're someone who has spent a life in music. I'm not going to reveal your age, but I'm 53 and I know you're a little bit younger than I am.
A little bit younger, a little bit younger.
But you've spent a life listening to so much music and playing in different bands. And so like you have like this whole repertoire, and you're trained. You started as a drummer. You're like a beautiful piano player. I mean, some of it sounds classical to me. I mean, a lot about the record to me sounds classical, and I'm a huge classical music fan. Like, I think I wrote something there. Like, I love Clint Mansell, who did like the Fountain soundtrack. I love so many different composers, but to be able to, it sounds almost like it's a composition of tracks for a film or something. Like there's so much depth that for you to do this and make these choices about la la las, whatever, it's coming from this place of, well, I mean, maybe not. What was it? I'll ask you. Was it happening for you where you're like, like let's see what this sounds like? Were these experiments? that were like ongoing? Because I can't wrap my head around it, because it just seems so coming from such a place of like just depth of musical assimilated musical knowledge that goes beyond just thinking and feeling and just being able to like communicate it through your voice and the instruments.
Thank you so much. Like, yeah, you are just, yeah, you were saying the kindest things, and I really appreciate that. Like, that, I mean, I honestly, I can't really put my finger on like all the influences that you said. It's kind of making me think for the first time. Like, I guess I did bring together a lot of influences, and I have listened to a wide variety of music. Like, and it must seep into my music, whether I'm conscious, I'm not consciously doing it. You know, I'm
Right.
not consciously doing it. And, you know, when I write songs, yes, sometimes it's experimental when I record. So when I recorded this album, Little Bird, I recorded it in GarageBand, you know, demos. And I recorded it layer by layer by layer. So I'd add the first riff first, and then I'd, you know, add the vocal melody on top. And then I would have to think of the bass part, and then I would record the bass part, and then I would record think of violin parts and put that in on a MIDI. Well, that was the second album. On the first one, I put it in on a Korg, and sometimes actually recorded real piano and real organ in the GarageBand. And then, you know, all the other instruments and flute. And so little by little by little, built up all these layers. And it was really weird when I was recording, because I would just hear parts in my head. I would just hear parts, and it felt like that was the part. And I would hear it almost clear as a bell, you know, like clear as crystal. And I'd be like, that is the trumpet part for Hunter One choruses, and nothing else. Or sorry, the French horn part, and like nothing else will do. That is the part, and I couldn't hear any other part but that part. It was almost, yeah, like the song was telling me what needed to happen. You know, it's like I was
Yeah.
just following the song's direction, or the I did a lot of like double harmonies to melodies. So there's like three vocals going on. Violins too. Sometimes there's three layers going on. I think in one part there were four going on. So it's like a violin quartet or something. And Andrea Morgan faithfully reproduced everything that I wrote, 10 times more than I better than I ever could have imagined. You know, like she truly made the violin parts come alive on this album and the next one. So yeah, I just really love harmonies and experimenting with harmonies. And it was really hard. Just I'd hear more layers and more layers, and sometimes it was just hard to just be like full stop, we that's enough layers, you know.
Yeah.
I think some parts maybe it was even detrimental, like a little things get a little too creamy when you have too many layers. Everything blends together and you can't hear anything.
It becomes a
But
drone.
yeah. So there were some parts we had to strip layers out of. And I don't know, I guess I'm kind of like a hoarder when it comes to layers. So
Well, that's part of your craft. But
yeah.
Andrea is like amazing. Like on Autumn, like 3 minutes and 12 seconds, there's this, she does this accompaniment that comes in, and then there's a riff that builds off the accompaniment. Like, it's so cool. It's not just that the strings are creating ambience. It's like she is accompanying you into this like really cool transition change in the song. Like, again, like a like so beautifully composed.
Thank you. Is this in Hunter 1 or Hunter 2? I can't remember.
I'm looking at my notes here, and I'm saying I'm looking from Autumn. So I'm looking at Autumn. The vocals are impressive. So no, this is Eden. Huge organ, the vocals are impressive. 312, Andrea accompaniment is flawless, and then the riff. Is it come and sing your song?
Come sing a song of woe with me. Come sing
Yes.
a song of death with me. Come sing a song of love with me. So, yeah, I think I know what part you're talking about. It's when the pump organ comes in and everything gets a little quieter and she's playing her violin. Da 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 da.
It's pretty clear from listening how you got the two of you on this record and this project. It's like symbiotic kinds of artistic expression going on there, like at a very
Yes,
deep level.
like she also, like Billy, just how did I get lucky enough to be paired with these people? Well, I actually know the answer to that. That was Nate Carson. He was kind of like the matchmaker on a dating site who brought us all together. I had never met Billy before. Nate hooked me up with Billy when I came up here to Portland, just made a decision to come up here to record. And then through Nate also, he connected me to Andrea and the other musicians who appeared on the album. And by the way, I forgot to mention that Kayla Dixon also contributed vocals to the
Wow.
beginning of Little Bird and some other little parts in Little Bird, and Aaron did too. So yeah, I forgot to.
Smash a wall, lose you.
It was the volume and also the energy. Like they had punk
Yeah.
in their heart. Like they were like,
Yes.
you know, they were
Incredible energy.
fighting. Yeah, they were not just playing music for fun. They were fighting for a cause, and they meant every word they sang, and you could feel that. Like they were trying to change the world, and they were. And anyway, but they played this style of slow metal that they were influenced by Sleep. That was who
Yeah.
they were influenced by back in 1996. So they were listening to Sleep before Sleep got really big. And so that's kind of they pulled a little from there, a little from Jimi Hendrix, and a little from 60s psychedelic, and they just created something really unique, with really strange time signatures and big fat riffs and angry punk lyrics. And
Cool. The vocalist is great.
so when I saw them, it was like an atom bomb going off. And that influenced me. That kind of reminded me about, like, I feel like I was straying from the path of music a little bit. Even though I was in High Rollers, I was still kind of lost in life. And seeing the Red Bennies kind of reminded me of that music is the ultimate, and that's the path I needed to be on. And it kind of jarred me awake in this certain way, and had a huge influence on not just the sound of Sub-Rosa years later, but just on me, on my life path. Like, it was a very positive influence on me. And you know, I do think sometimes in life we're meant to cross paths with people or music or albums to influence us in those ways.
Benny's the members, they become friends of yours?
Yes. Not then, not right then. I was too intimidated to talk to them.
Right.
Like, I was too intimidated.
Yeah.
But years later, I became friends with Dave Payne and his wife Lena Renee. And Lena is the one who I was in a band with Stiletto.
Oh,
We were
nice.
Stiletto with me. And Dave Payne was actually my first guitar teacher. He taught me my first few guitar lessons. I was never diligent about learning guitar like other instruments, but I did take some lessons. And
Right.
yeah, and Dave introduced me to drop B tuning, which is what became the Sub Rosa tuning, and still I use it in the keening. It's my favorite tuning. And yeah, so that was the Red Bennies. It's a very long story, but very important. The scene in Salt Lake City is incredible. Like, it's
Yeah.
one of the best music scenes in the country. And of course, I'm biased, but there's this huge counterculture there because of the conservative dominant culture in
Right.
Utah. And so there's this huge movement in Salt Lake City that could find its proper expression. There were tons of clubs. There were, you know, I don't know, hundreds of bands, several hundred core bands who were playing all the time in every genre imaginable, and solo artists. And there was a huge goth scene that I became involved in. I would join Violet Run, and we didn't know there was a goth scene. And Violet Run started, and I think we did start almost as soon as I got there, like 2000. That was my first band.
Yeah.
And we
You guys put out a record,
put
right?
out a couple
Couple
records.
records.
East of the Sun, West of the Moon was what's.
Okay.
Yeah, that was
Your
where
drumming
all.
is really like you're there's some serious drumming going on there.
Thank you.
It's really great.
I loved drumming. Drumming is my favorite, still my favorite instrument. Drums are my favorite
And
instrument.
you well, there's one quick thing I didn't mention that I know is true. Nate lent you his kit and you played all the drums on Little Bird.
Yes, that's right. So the next day in the studio, you know, it takes like several hours to just set up the drums,
Yeah.
kind of get started and a microphone thing. So I just started practicing the parts that I'd come up with. And I just practiced and practiced every moment I could. And before every take, we started recording the drum parts. When there was any moment of downtime, you know, I'd be practicing these parts that I'd barely just written. I look back at that and I'm just like, that was crazy that it even came together at all. So.
Like some people do a solo project, You like did a solo project and like went back to your roots all the way. Like all the way. Play the I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do the drums. It's like it's so cool and it
Thanks.
makes sense too, like as I think about the drumming and the parts, like there's not overplaying. Like that's such a like on the kinds of compositions you're doing, I could see how a lot of drummers would really struggle to like just do the tasteful kinds of pulling back. I mean, you know, it's just really in the pocket, but it makes sense like now, actually, more and more as I think about it. Like, who else could have played drums besides like program drums or something? Only
Thank
like
you.
you could have played them. That's really cool.
Thank you. Those were Nate's thoughts too, was that at the end of the day, I knew my songs better than anyone. And I knew the kind of feeling I wanted with the parts. And I did try to get fancier with some of the parts, and it just ended up sounding cluttered and overplayed. I did simplify, and they are pretty simple drum beats. But anything more sounded too much. And at the same time, I know that back in my heyday, I was a better drummer. So I mean, when I was practicing, going to like 4 or 5 band practices a week for years on end, I was just a better drummer, you know, when you're practicing all the time. So, I know that I could have played even better, but a mutual friend, Rachel, and oh my gosh, how can I not remember Bailey, Rachel Bailey, and
Wow,
her
you
sister,
remember names. I'm
yeah,
impressed.
her sister Mary Bailey.
When you
Rachel was
turn
my,
50, that's going to diminish. Sorry. Anyway.
yeah, I know. For a minute there, though, I couldn't quite
I'm
remember.
amazed. You got the
So,
last name. Okay. Yep.
yeah, Rachel was my roommate for my first year in Salt Lake City, and I first met her in Provo. So, she's this amazing, funny, intelligent person who was a total goth, and her sister Mary as well, and huge music fans. And so she was friends with Randall and introduced us. I think it was Randall who's really close to Mary. And anyway, I was like, I want to form a band. And he was like, me too. And then Joe Dolan,
You're
I can't remember, I think he was also friends with Mary or friends with Randall, but somehow we were just all friends that were fans of music and just formed a band together. And from the first time we started playing music, it was just sheer joy. You know, it was just
Oh, that's
like
fantastic.
being in bands was the most fulfilling thing I'd ever done. Like the excitement of preparing for shows, performing and presenting your music and your heart to people. And, being involved in the music scene, going to shows, learning about music, working for Slug magazine, Salt Lake Underground magazine, which is still active.
Yeah, I saw that they had like their 40th anniversary. So
Yes.
you were writing for Slug and you were writing for City Weekly.
Yes. And before that, I was the copy editor and calendar editor for the Event News Weekly.
Because
And
you were an English major
yes.
at so these were these your jobs
Yes,
while you're in the band?
those were my day jobs.
Which is so perfect too, because like you're totally engrossing yourself in like the scene.
Yes, I was absolutely immersed in the scene because I was interviewing bands, and my passion was to bring awareness to the local bands in the Salt Lake music scene. And so I was always trying to plug them into our to the newspapers and magazines I worked for, and trying to give them coverage. If that was a picture in the calendar for that week, if it was doing an interview with a local band, I was always trying to promote the Salt Lake music scene, because I just was like, we're get, this is good, the next Seattle. You know, that was a lot of us felt that way, because it was such a special scene. And there was a lot of unity, a lot of excitement. And I
I gotta
also lived.
read, forgive this interruption, for a Rebecca Vernon review from 2004 in the City Weekly. This is a review of the band Kinski and the album Static, or Alpine Static. If Rush worshipped Caius, they'd sound like Kinski. All instrumental. Kinski's raw, fury riffs straddle the gap between Fu Manchu and the snooty progginess, avant-garde timing, and mad movements of tech heads. Kinski, who have toured with Mission of Burma, which I love when you, and Comets on Fire, does truly rock when not delving into atmospheric experimentalism. However, you can't imagine someone saying, "Man, turn that shit to track 5. That's my favorite Kinski song." Kinski is a band to appreciate, not to get under your skin. They're stoner rock for music theory sophisticates.
Wow,
Like,
I
I am
cannot.
amazed. That is like three sentences, and it's like, these are such great reviews. I love it.
Thank
I
you.
love those. I mean, like, those are such cool, connective, like, there's one thing, like, to name drop lots of bands, like, but if Rush worshipped Caius, like, you've got me. Like, you've got me. I'm listening to that record. Like, because, like, it says so much. It's prog, but it's got, like, the down-tuned desert, stoner thing going on, that those bands are, like, seminal bands. It's like, what? If Rush worshipped.
And those bands are still far and few between, that the mixing prog with stoner or prog with like doom or black metal, like I feel like Dreadnought is that, you
Oh,
know, like
totally.
they bring together really interesting elements and make it all their own and do it so well. And you know, Kelly plays flute on both albums, by the way. Kelly Schilling, the one who plays flute.
Her
So I'm a
flute parts are, yeah, I love Dreadnought, and I love her flute parts on Little Bird. I think they're just
yeah.
beautiful.
Well, wait till you hear Devotion,
I
because
can't
it's
wait
even
to hear Devotion.
more. But yeah, I'm a huge Dreadnought fan. So yeah,
Was this did this come easy to you, like, when you're writing these reviews? Like, did you was this like a joy thing, or was it like trying to revise, and like, did you enjoy doing this?
I love writing, and also writing is hard work. It was hard work, like especially because I had really strict word counts. And so especially when I
Yeah, they're like so short.
when I did City Weekly reviews, especially, I had to, I mean, it's like that quote from, I think it was Mark Twain. I would have written a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time. Like editing, self-editing, it comes to music too. It takes a lot of
So
time and
these things
effort.
are probably like 3 times as long, and you just sculpt them down.
Yes, that's right.
What?
Like the nugget to
And you,
the.
but you enjoyed the whole process of doing that. Like,
I mean, sometimes it was really hard, and I was up against strict deadlines too, but I was always happy with the result. I was always, it's fun to be, it's really rewarding to be done and to read what you wrote and be happy with it and say, okay, I expressed what I needed to when I was trying to
That
describe
must
the.
have been so cool too, because you're playing in a really serious band like Violet Run, and you're listening to so much music and reviewing it.
Yes, exactly. Like working for City Weekly, and you know, I was their copy editor for a year, and then I did CD reviews for a couple years after that, or a year later. And then Slug Magazine, I was the associate editor for 3 years, interviewing bands, listening to, you know, tons of CDs that were coming through the office. I was always up on, you know, who was what, you know, the movements of all the major rock and indie rock movements. I was always kind of Just it was like I was going to school. I was studying, and I went to so many shows, just
Yeah.
hundreds of shows in Salt Lake City. And just I felt like it was important to educate myself on music and
Yeah.
to learn and absorb as much as I could. So Stiletto, so I've been feeling for a while that I needed to start my own project and write my own songs, and that I didn't want to hear that from my intuition at all. I was very scared of the idea of singing in front of people, and I'd never ri really written a song before, except one when I was 18, and it wasn't good. And so I was I'd never written a song before I, well, only that one bad song before I started Sub Rosa. And anyway, I just kept avoiding that feeling. I was like, no, I want to stay behind the drums. And so right about that time, Stiletto came along and asked me if I wanted to play drums in their project. My friend Carrie Wakefield was putting it together, and my friend Julie Stutznegger was joining her in her project as the guitarist and the riff writer. And Carrie Wakefield sent me a mix, gave me a mixtape of like X-Ray Specs and Joan Jett and Plasmatics, Wendy O.
Wendy
Williams.
Williams. Love
And
it.
I, and the Runaways, and I was sold. I was like, wow, you want to start a girl punk band, female punk band that's based on like these really amazing women who kind of started it all. And so yeah, we were a band for 3 years,
I
and
couldn't find any releases. Like,
we did have one. You know what? I could mail you one.
oh,
I
that would
still,
be awesome. I'll
yeah,
send you my address.
we still have like 500 CDs of our
Oh,
group.
awesome. Oh, I want one. Yes.
So yeah, if you send me your give me your address,
I will.
I
Yeah.
will get one and send you one.
Yeah,
But
cool.
Stiletto was actually a really popular local band. We were far more popular than Sub Rosa was. When it took Sub Rosa getting kind of known outside of Utah for more people to start coming to our shows. Like people
Wow.
weren't that into Sub Rosa the first little bit, but people were into Stiletto from the moment we started playing. And our first show was like sold out at Urban Lounge. It
How
was
did you join Stiletto? Was that just through your friend? Who was it?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Carrie approached me because she knew I was a drummer, and
Yeah.
and we wanted it to be like a girl punk band, and so there's not that
Yeah.
many female drummers. So
Yeah.
she approached me, and the reason we were popular is because the women in the band were really respected and popular women in the Salt Lake music scene. They've been part of the scene for 10, 15 years. Julie was in a band called Power Tools for Girls, which is, I think, one of the best band names ever.
What a fantastic name. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she was in a ton of other bands too. She's also been was in a really amazing Salt Lake band called Invaders, one of my favorite Salt Lake bands. Really, really heavy, fronted by Phil, the singer. And anyway, Gavin was the drummer. Oh gosh, I can't remember everyone.
That's okay.
Anyway,
Yeah.
so Carrie Wakefield was also in bands that were really respected, and she was in a band called The Wolves, with an F, The Wolves, in Salt Lake City, headed by my friend Eli Morrison, and they were extremely popular in Salt Lake City. Incredible, like 60s, 70s garage rock, mixed with just rock and Iggy Pop. And anyway, they were very dark and dangerous. So anyway, so that we were kind of like a kind of like a super group in a certain way. And so everyone, loved Carrie and Julie. I was kind of more of a newcomer, but that's why we became pretty popular right away. And then the songs were really good. Julie Stutznegger's an incredible songwriter, really great guitarist. And then Lena, Renee, and I, we were, she was the bassist and I was the drummer. And yeah, it was a really fun time.
That
And
must have been, yeah. It's like
we became,
you're like under their learning tree as these
yes.
like these giants of the scene.
Yes. And then they became, that was the first band I actually played guitar in. I played drums in the band for a couple years, and then I moved to guitar. And I think Julie and I both played guitar on stage together. She taught me guitar riffs. So it was that was my first time playing guitar in front of audiences before starting Sub Rosa. So Sub Rosa was kind of starting right when Stiletto was ending. So that I saw it as like a good way to practice and get better at playing guitar.
So Sub Rosa is like it's secret, right? It refers to like this secret. Like, so where does the name, like, why do you go with that? Why did you decide on that name?
So it means under the rose, and
Under the
actually
rose.
Sarah's the one who came up with that name, and I liked it right away. We were
And
considering.
you met Sarah at City Weekly, or what? You met, they were working,
We did.
the
Wow.
Sarah and Kim.
I met Sarah at City Weekly. She was the graphic designer in the graphic design department, one of the graphic designers, and I was the copy editor for City Weekly. And yeah, that's how we met and became friends. And we were friends for like 3 years before Sub Rosa started. We were roommates for a while, for like almost a whole year. So yeah, we were really good friends before Sub Rosa started.
So she comes up with the name, like, so you guys are just hang, like, are you, were you planning and plotting? Like, were you like, I think Stiletto's done, and like, I wanna, like, we should do a band.
Yeah, like Stiletto, everyone had different priorities and they loved Stiletto, but the people had busy lives and it was never going to be a band that was going to like tour extensively or anything like that. And I knew that I wanted to be in a band that toured. I wanted music to be, music was my everything. And the girls in Stiletto, they love music too, but I think people have different goals. Like everyone can be just as dedicated, but some people don't like touring, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So
That's where, like, you know, the lifers are, like, the folks that are truly the lifers are gonna tour. Like, that's sort of that's rubber meets the road for bands, right?
yeah. I mean, Julie is definitely a lifer, and Carrie's a lifer. Like they all still continued
Well,
playing with
they
me.
were older too, right? Or
They were a little older than me.
okay,
But
yeah.
yeah, they taught me a lot about dedication to music. But you know, Carrie had a career as a massage therapist that she'd put a lot of, and she was a teacher at a massage therapy school
Yeah.
in Salt Lake. And she, you know, we couldn't have toured extensively. That would have interfered in her
Yeah.
career a little bit too much. And so there's just some things like some people can't do or whatever. So
Right.
anyway.
Totally.
But yeah, so gosh, where were we?
So the beginnings of Sub Rosa, like,
Oh yeah. So I knew for 3 years before I started Sub Rosa that I wanted to start it, but I was kind of running from that nagging feeling like I really need to start my own band.
right.
So I went through a really hard time in May of 2005, and I kind of had this feeling, this epiphany like, well, it's now or never, you know. I think this is the time to start that band I wanted to start. And I was actually so it was such a hard time, and I was so severely depressed that, you know, I had to go to a doctor. You know, it was the first time I actually had gone to a doctor for depression. And so there were lots of life changes that were happening, and I just kind of had this epiphany, like, I think that it's time for me to do this project that I've been putting off. And I bought a 4-track recorder from Musician's Friend for like $99. I had no idea what I was doing. And Sarah and I both, I think we had one amp between the two of us. And so I started writing songs on my little 4-track and just kind of recording them. We didn't have iPhone. I didn't have iPhones that I could record on yet. Everything was like these little, like the 4-track, and then this little handheld recording device that I used to take around and record parts. And so I started writing the very basic demos, you know, like that became part of the songs on The Worm Has Turned. and like Colder and oh gosh,
It sounded like stoner kind of rock was
yeah.
that's what you were starting to really get into, like in terms of like the sonic vision, like
Yes. Stoner Sludge was definitely what I was
was the
most
scene, was
familiar
there
with.
like a stoner sludge scene like in Salt Lake too happening?
There were some heavy bands, like a band called Fumamos. There was a band called Tarn. There were some other heavy bands. Oh, gosh, the Red Bennies were still going. They were changing their sound a little, but there was still like there were like were traditional metal bands as well.
Butt rock, or do you?
Yeah. I worked for the End Records in
Oh,
2002.
you did? Oh, I didn't
I
know that.
started working for them and I got exposed to, you know, that's when I first started to learn about Isis and Neurosis. And
Oh,
that's when I first started re
yeah.
realizing, like, oh, there's like this whole, this is the music I want to make. And they're already doing it. And there were moments when I was like, well, there's no need for me to start a band because Isis and Neurosis are already doing it, you know? And, but I'm glad I didn't let that discourage me and just found my own way. But
Because you're listening to it like in like at the like before the whole thing really blew up, right? I mean,
yeah, so I was exposed to that, you know, the bands on the End Records, Agalloch, The Gathering, and they had a mail order catalog. So, you know, we would listen to tons of CDs that came through that, you know, that the people were ordering and that they were sending out, like Porcupine Tree and Green Carnation and
There
Green
was
Carnation.
one band, I think I messaged you, but I fucking love, I'd never heard of this band until I read your review. Antimatter.
Yes, Antimatter is such a
Like, I've been
great.
listening to Savior. That record is amazing. So
Yeah.
great. And what pisses me off a little bit about it, like the against the guy from Anathema, the two are the two that,
Yeah,
but
the Nephilim.
they don't identify the vocalists, and these two vocalists, these women are like amazing vocalists.
Yes.
And like you wouldn't know they were part of the band. It's, I don't know, maybe on the CD there's more recognition, but I was kind of surprised. Like I think the vocal performances, I love the music too.
Yes.
But I think the vocal performances are so cool on those records. Like
Yes.
really deep.
Yeah, the End Records was pushing a lot of boundaries.
Big time.
Yeah, taking chances on really excellent music that was had just such, I don't know, just such elegance and refinement and just, I don't know, they were a really influential label. It's too bad that it's not around anymore, but yeah, Andreas introduced me to a lot of metal and gosh, there's so much I could tell you, but I'll
Ulver
tell
was
you.
on the end.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love Ulver. That's when I first started learning about the black metal movement and about, you know, all the, you know, Emperor and Mayhem. I knew about Emperor beforehand. I had metal. Travis Pierce from Violent Run had made me a mixtape and Emperor was on it. That's how I first, and Electric Wizard and all of
So that's
that.
when like goth people are starting to listen to black metal.
Yeah, there was cross. Travis Pierce was definitely
Yeah.
the metalhead in Violent
Yeah.
Run and introduced me to a lot of stuff. But I remember, I'll tell you one story. I remember being in a club for, I was covering, I think I was at CMJ or South by Southwest for Slug Magazine because they would go to these festivals. And I heard the music playing in between. I think I was seeing Children of Bodom, and there was a CD playing in between the bands, and I was also saw Crisis, I think, Karen Crisis. And anyway, the CD playing, I was like, what is this? What music is this? And I went up to the DJ, you know, not the DJ, the house guy, and I was like, what is playing? And he pulled the CD out after it was done. And it was like a white and orange CD, and it said 1515. And I was like, who is 1515? I was like, how am I ever going to find this band, you know? And he said, I don't know who this is. I don't know. We don't have the case and stuff. I was like, okay. So a year later, I was at the End Records, and Andreas was like, I have a song that I want to, I have a band I want to introduce you to. And he brought out the CD, and it was 1515. It was Isis. And put it in the CD player. I was like, that's the CD I've been looking for. So yeah.
The
So
best that I know those that I've had similar experience. That was like the best experience, right? When you hear it and you don't know it and you're looking for it and then you finally have it. And it's like,
yes.
this is
Yeah,
it.
exactly. It was one of those moments where, yeah. So
So that was
anyway.
that super clarifying for sub was that clarifying for what you wanted to do musically?
Knowing that there were other bands out there
Yeah.
making at least similar sounds to what I wanted to do
Yeah.
made me feel like I was a little less alone and I wasn't in a vacuum and made me feel like, oh, there's a movement going on, you know?
Yeah.
But still, when Sub Rosa started, all these things were like, data points, but I wasn't trying to copy anyone necessarily, unless it was the
Right.
Red Bunnies. I probably, they, I wasn't actually even trying to copy them. I just kind of took their sound or their methodology or their approach, and I was like, okay, I like this and this about Red Bennies, and I like this and this about PJ Harvey, and I'm gonna mash this together,
Yeah.
and that was the worm has turned, really. So yeah.
And then
So
Strega is the first pro is that the first proper release?
yeah, that's the first proper release. So
I
Sarah and
listened
I.
to it again and it's really cool. It is definitely more stonery. Like it's got the more the riffs and things are more kind of up front,
Yeah.
less orchestra, less changing parts. I really like it. I think it's really cool. But anyway.
Yeah, I think we started kind of finding our, the sound and the style, and they kind of gotten zeroed in on our own,
Yeah.
finding out who we are, and not our influences. I think every band's first album is sometimes a reflection of their influences, and then it's like a journey as you discover who you really are. And
Totally.
yeah. And I remember also after we made those first demos on my 4-track recorder for Musician's Friend, we shopped the demo around to different musicians in the scene who we wanted to join, and nobody wanted to join Sub Rosa. We were just a beginner band, and we couldn't get people to join.
Yeah.
And finally, we gave the demo to my friend Bonnie Shoup, or someone knew Bonnie, and she was learning to drum, and so she joined our band as the first drummer. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so then Strega happened, and then I Hate Records was interested and released it, and I met Ola Blomqvist, and it kind of like he was a huge influence on me, huge champion of Sub Rosa. He is he and then also Peter, who took a chance on Sub Rosa, really brought Sub Rosa more into the metal scene and into the awareness of the metal scene. And then it just kind of went on from there, I guess.
Yeah. And how did it feel, in all honesty, like when Pitchfork gave More Constant Than the Gods an 8.4? Like when you saw that review. Like in
That
all
was.
honesty, like what was that experience like?
There were absolutely some moments with More Constant that were, just felt almost unreal,
People
and
were like blown away by that record in
it
2013.
really, yes, that was a really huge milestone for the band for sure. Like, we put our whole heart into it, and if we hadn't been satisfied with it and it was getting good reviews, I would have felt weird. But I knew that I was happy with it, and we all were. And so, if people liked it or not, that we didn't, that was just extra gravy on top. The most important thing was that we were happy with it and that we had done what we set out to do. That's who the Usher is. And the girl on the front is a depiction of the Usher. She's a depiction of death as a psychopomp, like a someone who, gently and kindly brings you to the other side.
This huge process, and a lot of it was agonizing. And then the record's done, and then the validation of relapse, like putting it out. That must have been like another just a like validating and surreal kind of moment for you. Is that accurate?
Yes, it felt very, it did feel really great that they believed in it that much, and they and that it was
What was
valid.
the, do you remember the first, so you sent the recording off to Relapse.
Yes.
Like how long did it take till you heard back from them? And like what was the response? Do you remember?
Within like 2 or 3 days, I heard back that they were interested and they really liked it, but they needed to get the buy-in from the core staff members. They have to get that buy-in.
Yeah.
There has to be kind of a vote, or they won't release an album. They have to have a majority, or they won't release an album no matter what. And no matter
Yeah.
how much an album could make them money, they won't release it if they don't genuinely love the album and aren't genuinely interested in it. So yeah, they took a vote, and I think it was unanimous. I think it was unanimous for the Little Bird. Oh, I think I was what I was gonna say was,
Yeah.
they also just they've been so easy to work with. They've been so respectful. Everything was very smooth. Like it just fell into place so naturally, and just, yeah, it couldn't have been better. Like this is where the Keening was meant to be. This was our home. So,
It's
yeah.
such an incredible label.
Yeah,
I
they
mean,
are.
Yob is on Relapse.
Yeah. And there are members of Relapse who, if they aren't musicians and in bands, like Enrique is in the band Silver, I think, or The Silver, they are huge fans of music and have been for 20 years.
Totally.
They were going to a
Yeah.
hardcore punk and metal shows when they were like 16, like
Yeah.
they are music fans through and through, and that just shines in everything they do and how they treat their artists. And I just yeah it couldn't have been a better landing place. for the
That's
Kingdom.
fantastic. So tell me about the tour with Dylan and Bellwitch. And
Yeah.
there's you and Dylan, like Dylan's get I think he's working on a master's in creative writing. He's
Yes.
another like super creative guy and
Yeah.
going on tour with them. That must be so and going to Europe, that must be so exciting.
Yes, he's the only other person I know who's gotten an MFA besides the people I was actually in the program with, at University of Utah, like however, 15 years ago. So I was really excited when Dylan told me he was also getting an MFA in creative writing. We're so excited. I've been friends with Dylan for years and years
Like
and
when he was in
years.
Samothrace.
Yes, I was friends with him in Samothrace. And I guess I've probably been friends with Dylan for over 10 years, I think, by now. And Jesse, I started becoming friends with in the last few years. There was some overlap when I was mixing with Billy and they were there starting to record their album or mix, sorry, mix with Billy at Flora, I think is this name of the studio here. I'm probably messing up names, but yeah, we kind of like were ships crossing in the night. They were staying at Billy's and I was staying at Billy's, and we just have always, been friends. And so we're so excited to go on tour with them. And couldn't be like we're very honored that they asked us because we know they could ask lots of different bands. And so we're just really, really excited about it. We're excited to play some B markets in Europe that I've never played before, like Istanbul, Sofia, Bulgaria, Spain. I've never played Spain, so I'm
Wow.
really excited.
That is
But
awesome. So you're going to Turkey? That is
yes. And
amazing.
I'm also excited to play Zagreb, Croatia, because Sabroza played a show there at AKC Attack. We're playing the same venue. And that show was so, somehow we just made such a connection with the promoters and people working the club that night that we became great friends and stayed in touch. And when they found out we're coming back to play there, like some of them reached out to me and they were like, "You're coming back to Zagreb."
Were you right? Will you do like another tour diary? Like, because I didn't get a chance to read from that, but I loved your Sub Rosa tour diary that was in City Weekly. I
Oh,
loved
yeah.
every. It was so cool because you had like good and bad of like the different places you went. Oh, best worst. You had best worst.
I am just so impressed with your research. Like you, I haven't read that in years and I forgot that I wrote it. I'm like, that would be cool to do something like that again. I
It's
forgot
so
that.
cool. I loved reading it because it's just like, where's the thing? It's
Was it
just
in
the
Slug or City Weekly?
City Weekly.
Is it City Weekly? Okay.
Where's the thing about the watermelon candy? So October 20th, best. This weird Milka chocolate bar with watermelon filling. I found at a corner mart that had like Pop Rocks in it. I made everyone eat a square. Kim discovered the Pop Rocks exploded more when you drank beer after. Like I just love that little bit. Like it's like just a tour, you know, it's like a in this foreign country and it's like such a Pop Rock. It's like such an unusual simple thing, but like so memorable.
Yes,
I don't know. I don't
totally.
know, something about it. I just love those like anecdotes from the road.
Little details. Yeah,
Yeah.
I remember that Milka watermelon. And was that the one that popped in your mouth, or was it?
Yeah, I think so. It had
Yeah,
Pop Rocks.
it had Pop Rocks in it. I absolutely love Milka candy bars. Those are my favorite candy bars in the world. So yeah.
Oh, and this is Slovenia, Tuesday, October 21st. The gig in Slovenia. Marco, the promoter of the show in Slovenia, flagged us down on the main road of the small village of Pivka, where he had helped create a youth cultural center with the help of some grants. The center had free internet, a kitchen where he heated up some amazing homemade vegan soup for everyone. One
I
of the
remember
best
that.
meals of the whole tour, hands down. In a room with nine mattresses and a space heater.
Yeah, I totally remember that. Nine bare mattresses and a space heater, and the vegan soup was so good. Yeah. That was a really special show too. What we played there with Beneath the Frozen Soil.
Right.
It's from
Right.
Sweden. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be fun if you do something like that again.
Yeah, it would be really fun. I don't think we're playing Slovenia this time, but yeah.
You have to tell me about some of the candy bars from Istanbul.
I will. I
I know
will.
I, I know ice cream is amazing in Turkey. Do you know that? Like ice cream is like
Wow.
in yeah, like ice cream is like a huge deal in Istanbul.
I'm gonna have to
I
try it
only
out.
know that from the great Tony Bourdain, because I was like a fanatic of Tony Bourdain for years, and he does a Istanbul thing, and there's a whole thing about the ice cream.
I've never been to Turkey and I'm really excited. I have been to the Middle East. I've been to Dubai and Qatar, and I absolutely love the part of the Middle East, parts of the Middle East I have seen. And so it'll be because Turkey's considered part of the Middle East. So
Right.
I'm really, really excited to see that. I also want to see Morocco really badly someday. There's so much of the world I haven't seen yet. So, yeah.
Little pieces with this tour. Like,
Exactly. I'll make some notches on my belt this time. So,
So anything else you want to share about like what's happening with the band? And I mean, you guys already have recorded a second record.
we're just really excited. I'm so happy to be in this band with my wonderful, bandmates, people who are playing these songs live with me and bringing them to life. Like I couldn't do it without them. I a year ago it was really hard for me to imagine how to play these songs live. And now that we've done it, it just opens up so many roads in my mind. And so
The Hunter sounded phenomenal on the Decibel Fest, like with Agalloch. Like
thank
you guys
you.
sounded amazing. Like
Thank you. Like we decided to strip out a bunch of layers, focus
right.
on the core and make that core as lush and, heavy in parts, as lush as we possibly could. And I think that was the right approach, like choosing what to focus on, transcribing some parts to other instruments, like Christy plays a harp part on her viol on her guitar. Sorry, she plays a harp part on her guitar at one point. And also Andrea plays a harp part on her guitar on her violin at one point. That like kind of just being adaptable and focusing on what's most important. So it's really exciting to bring it to life with these people. And then another thing I that kept coming up in my mind was, the next album I'm going to write is an opera, and I think I'm going to actually go back to a lot of heaviness of the heavy riffs. Like I miss that. I do love heavy music. I mean, that's my joy and my love. And so I probably it's going to be heavier the next album.
The opera will be
The opera
cool.
will, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
exciting. So thank you so much for spending like all this time with me on Endless
Thank
Metal. It was just such a joy, and yeah, thank you. I can't thank you enough.
you so much to you for doing all this research and just putting all this time and effort into this podcast. And that means so much to me. And yeah, and I hope that I've given you what you needed, because I know you really love the music, and I hope that I was able to give you the sound bites that you were after and the information.
No,
Yeah.
I mean, just having you, because I have just so much deep respect for you as an artist, you know, and it's like just having you here sharing, that just was a gift for me.
It's all